Okay, Ron. Thanks for meeting with me this morning.
No problem.
Just in our chatting just now, you were saying that you were a specialist in geography. You've taken over history.
Yeah.
And you've noticed some real changes in the way in which geography is perceived as opposed to history nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, I was a geographer. I went to university. I studied geography. I came in as a geography teacher. Soon got pulled into history teaching. And when I was head of faculty, we have too many geographers, therefore I taught the history and I taught the RE. So, and then a job comes up in County Durham to be Inspector for History and Geography. Well, it was just made for me, you know. Yeah. But it has allowed me then to look at two things. The first thing you've got to remember about County Durham is we've broken the trend. We still retain a school improvement service of 100 people.
Right.
Now, the DCSF did not like this, because it was a strength of a local authority. And therefore, we've kept our teacher centres, we've kept our...
Oh, right.
Yeah, we've kept our subject-specific networks, we've kept our work on courses and conferences and so on. And it's really successful. But we had to fight against a national picture of reducing the number of people in the local authority that were supporting schools and giving it to the schools. So what we had to do is we had to persuade the schools that we could help them, but they had to buy in our services.
Oh, right.
So all our work is, all the money is given to the schools,
yeah.
And our schools buy us back in as partners.
I presume that's the plan, yeah.
So, geography and history in the County of Durham. Geography... one of the things that I've got to do, I've got to go and watch everybody teach, who teaches geography and history in the county, in the comprehensive schools, over a 2-year period. I'm finding history is much better taught than geography.
Oh, right. Why do you think that is?
I'm getting far more exciting learning, great opportunities for the children to discover learning for themselves rather than be told it, much better course, much better group work in history. The historians will choose the content to fit the learning, whereas the geographers will teach the content.
So, when you say they decide they want them to learn a particular skill, and then they choose content to suit that?
To suit the skill. And that skill is historical based as well. So it's how do we interpret sources? So they will then do a piece of work around something, which historically we might always have taught, but they've got the purpose now, and the purpose is actually to pick out contradictory sources which will confuse and disturb the thinking of those young people, rather than just tell them the battle of the story of the Battle of Hastings.
The geographers, did they not have a revision to geography teaching which included, you know, skills for geography?
Yes, they did.
I seem to remember that school's council work.
Absolutely.
On geography.
And we had a phenomenal successful introduction of thinking skills for geography, based for PhD at Newcastle University. It came and it was slightly absorbed and then lost its point. And the geographers have gone back to the content, so we have to study glaciation. No, we don't. No children is deprived of their life chances if we never study glaciation. What they have to study is, if we see a landscape, we have to study, well, what factors have made that landscape? And can we trust the evidence of our eyes? Because we're trying to look into the past with landscape development. Whereas they get besotted with the content.
Do you think that's partly the result of the national curriculum in geography?
The national curriculum over the last 15 years has not helped either.
Geography or history?
No, hasn't helped either. It took away from, and especially in pre-secondary schools, it took away the potential of the teachers to choose what to teach and when to teach it for the best development of the pupils. I don't think there was any advantage. I'm not seeing any advantages. Sorry.
If I go back to what you were saying about when you came into the advisory service.
Yes.
What year was that?
1999. Yep.
So as well after the national curriculum come in.
Yep.
So before that, you were working in secondary schools.
In County Durham.
In County Durham.
With an advisory service, because we never lost it, remember?
No.
You know?
No.
and with a network of teachers and with an opportunity to get with other people and talk about what it is that we're trying to do and how to do it. But the majority of the work within the national curriculum work, we had to fight in order to persuade people not to take the national curriculum as gospel. The national curriculum was the indicator. Do you remember those? What were they? They were type of actions. There were 14, let's say, geography themes that you could study.
Attainment targets.
No, not the targets, but actually a program of study. It was a topic approach.
Yeah.
And school after school after school adopted those as though they were now the curriculum. Of course they weren't. They were ideas of what the curriculum could look like.
Yeah.
And I think we missed a real opportunity then to persuade schools. Because, I mean, now when I've come in and I'm talking to primary schools and we've got an island, let's say, in geography, which is in Scotland, and they say to themselves, can we ignore that island? Can we do Holy Island, which is near to us? Of course you can. But because it was there, it was in the programmes of study, as an exemplar, they took it as gospel.
Do you think history teachers were the same?
Exactly the same.
Yeah.
Exactly the same.
Why do you think...
So if he said Florence Nightingale, we had to do Florence Nightingale.
Yeah.
No, you could have done all sorts of people, based here in the north, based wherever it is that you want. You could have done people abroad, you know.
Do you think that local history suffered a bit because of the national curriculum?
Very much so, yeah.
Because up here, you've got a completely different historical tradition, haven't you?
Of course we have, that's right. And a tradition that we're very proud of, but actually, in order to understand who we are today, we have to understand that tradition, you know. And I mean, if a teacher gets really besotted and excited about bead, and his way of actually calculating Easter, but it's a passion for them, they can put that over far better than they can by exploring somebody who lived in another part of Britain and didn't influence the local area. So the opportunity to take your people, your events, your situations, your key moments in history from your local area, we're having to teach the teachers all that again.
So, you were saying about the teachers' centres.
Yes. Yeah.
Has that been a means of keeping people in touch with the local history?
It's whatever it is that you want to keep them in touch with. So, for instance, in history, we run a network of history teachers, the people who coordinate history in primary schools. We run a network for them every term. Currently.
When you say run a network, is that a meeting every term?
A meeting every term. Voluntary. We also offer, as part of the service, if they say we want help with the development of our history, their programmes of study, their field work, whatever it is, their understanding of levels, we will provide an expert from our service to go and work with that school one-to-one on those issues. They've got the money, they just pay us for that service.
Do you find that primary schools are bothering to pay for advisory help in history as opposed to the English and maths work that obviously is
priority? You've hit it. It's whatever priority is. But if you get somebody who comes into a primary school and they've been made into the history coordinator and they haven't got a clue, and this happens, then that school sometimes does get in touch with them and say, I would like a 3-hour session with this person. It'll be after school. It's at their own time. It's to bring them up to date with that sort of information.
Yeah.
I've just had my first secondary like that. Now that worries me.
You mean it was a secondary teacher of history who didn't know any history?
And there's no historians in the school.
Oh dear. So was this somebody being drafted across from another subject? And what subject were they coming
in? It was RE.
So the RE teacher was being asked to take control of all the history teaching in the school.
And not another historian in the school.
Goodness.
So we've helped that person with the what history is really all about. And that's going to take a few years. She's created the most amazing schemes of work. She isn't blinkered. She's seeing potential. I went and saw a lesson that she taught about a month ago, and it was around the slave trade. 70% of that lesson was about slavery today.
Ah.
Okay. You see the RE coming in.
Yeah.
You know.
I think that's a worry for most history teachers.
It was a worry, except it hooked those children onto why they should study slavery in the past. Maybe she's spent too much time, you know, but she's on that journey as well, and she has to feel comfortable. But her historical sources were apt. They fitted the purpose of the lesson, but the lesson was about, if what's the worst? Was slavery in the past worse than slavery today? Now, that's a question young people today should be asking. You know, but we'll have to work with that. She has no understanding of levels in history, so we're working with that person. I worry about those schools up and down our country who don't have the service. Who do they call on? We say, go on to the HA website. You know, go on to the DCSF website. Know that, you know, it's one-to-one interaction. So a person would say, actually, I don't understand what we're talking about here. Can you go back three steps? That's what professional development is really all about.
So on your staff, have you got enough history teachers who could do that sort of thing?
I've got access.
You use people from the schools, do you?
No, I've got two people. I've got a historian and a geographer who are they're private, they're consultants, but they work for me most of the time. I work 3 days a week. I've got two members of staff who are in our team who I know are past geographers who I call on when I need it. I've got two people who are past historians, and I've got two people who are primary based. Neither of them are historians or geographers, but I can call on them, and I do a lot of my work with them and bringing them up to date in their thinking. So we've also got a separate team which looks after out-of-classroom learning, global dimension. So all in all, and some of those are geographers as well, all in all I have about a team of 10 or 12 I can call on.
That's very good, isn't
which
it?
Which I think is...
Yeah, it's quite unusual
now. It's
great,
you know.
Yes.
That's why we're bucking the trend, I think. But I think we were wise to do so. But now, I've called into Hartlepool, I've called into Sunderland, we run the networks now for South Tyneside because there isn't anybody else to run them.
Oh, so you're actually in touch with teachers who are in the other authorities?
We can be.
And do you go in to deliver training
Absolutely.
For them?
So there's a Catholic community here in the northeast as well, and they've got a partnership. They called me in about a fortnight ago to run a session, 2.5 hours, on what does outstanding learning look like in history in secondary schools. And there were about 15 historians, all from Catholic schools, Stockton, Hartlepool, Middlesbrough and so on, the southern part of our diocese, but we're a business, so they called us in, you know. We're happy.
That's good. I was thinking about the network you mentioned. What percentage of your primary school teachers would attend your annual meeting?
Not many. We get about 20, 25.
Right. And but they're from the bigger primary schools, I suspect.
Not necessarily.
Right.
They're often from the people who have a need for it. So they've just been made, you know, history coordinator.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a session on, so they go. I don't think we've cracked that one yet, Nicola, and really don't. 25 out of 250 primary schools is not enough. But with the secondary schools, I regularly get 25 out of 36.
That's good.
And they've got a termly meet, they've got a termly morning. I take them out of school time, whereas primary schools, I don't. I take them out of their own time.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the issue, I don't know.
And your network with the secondary schools, you mean you're 25, will it always be the head of history or would it be one of the team who would
The head of history or somebody who they delegate in their place.
Yeah.
Okay. And of course, remember, I now know everybody who teaches history in the County of Durham. At secondary level.
Yeah.
So when somebody comes through that door, and I know it's not the head of department, but I know which school they are and I know them.
Yeah.
But they're there for a purpose. They're there for the purpose to take back the thinking we're going to do today as a community and to take it back into their team. So the PowerPoint we use, the resources we use are all given to them freely so they can go back. So last time we met, we talked about the new controlled assessment, East Age 4.
Yeah.
We talked about that. We had an up-to-date PowerPoint on what the latest thinking was. we made them work in groups according to the boards which they'd worked at, and then there was the expectation that they would then go back to their teams within their schools if it was pertinent to their development and continue the discussion there.
There have been a lot of changes in exams, haven't there?
Yes.
And in the new revisions to the curriculum.
Yes.
Since 1999, actually.
Absolutely.
When citizenship started to
Absolutely.
Appear and the literacy and numeracy initiatives.
That's right.
How do you think those initiatives have affected history teaching?
I think there is, in history, there has been an attempt, but really only in the last two or three years, to start thinking about some of those citizenship type, Britishness, who are we, where do we come from, where are we going, those sort of issues, and integrate that somewhat into the history curriculum. I've seen some imaginative stuff. There was one which was done in link with Durham University, where we took a Roman emperor here on Adrian's Wall, who was from North Africa, okay, Negroid race, or mixed Negroid race, emperor, most of his senior staff there, and we were exploring with young children that actually black people, this isn't the first time black people have been in our country.
That's a very unusual example in the Northeast, isn't it?
Because we're an all-white working class community in the main.
Yeah, in the main.
Which has huge prejudicial values being spread. We have problems with the BNP in some areas of our community. Yeah.
Do you think those are mainly deprived areas where people feel jobs aren't available to them or resources aren't available?
There's two areas in particular, one's around Shildon and one's around Concert. Yes.
Yeah.
And and it is about preying on the worries that the local community have about jobs and so on.
Yeah.
There's one or two, there's one certainly about teachers who was removed because of their serious links with the party as well.
Right.
And the party then targeted that school very badly, having vans and people outside. And
goodness.
It's not been pleasant, that. But then I saw another great example where a school got hold of Anne Frank and devised with the Anne Frank Foundation, and they created a brand new set of displays and then took that around Durham and had it available, and the children taught the adults about what Anne Frank was trying to tell us, the journey that she'd made and the journey that they'd made as learners.
You mean they were teaching their parents, or were they...
Yeah, we opened it up in the communities, and they were the people who were the interface between the resource, which was a panel intervention, and the adults, or another school. They became that interface. So they asked the question, so what do you notice about this? And that was a fascinating way to learn.
Yes.
You know.
So when teachers meet together, obviously you have a training objective, but part of it will be the networking that is available to them.
Definitely
there.
The networking. So the last time that we networked, we put them together on tables with people who were doing the same exam board.
Yeah.
Right? Because they wanted to talk about the controlled and talk about who was doing what and how were they doing it. But the ones that actually that board were enabling them to do. Networking is vital. But that's one of the things I get when I was called into this school where there's no historian. Within a week, she'd visited another historian. She knew her name. This other historian was there to greet her. Because who's the best person? It's not going to be this old person who actually is just desperate to get out, where I've got a young female head of department who's made a wow at that department, and it's 5 miles away from this one, and I've got two people to send her to. So it's knowing who to send her to.
Yeah.
That's right.
You were talking about having teacher centres. What exactly do you mean by that?
We have two places. We have three places which are set up with rooms where teachers can meet. Teachers can hire those rooms themselves, you know. So sometimes, you know, if there was one example, there's a school which is suffering at the moment through Ofsted, and the head of history is leaving, and there's a new head of history going to be appointed internally. We've taken those two people, that person and another member of staff, and we're doing all of their training to get them ready for taking responsibility for the department over in a new way, but we've taken it out of the context of the school, so we're not worried, we're not going to be annoyed, there's nobody going knocking on their door, and we've placed it in our centre down in Spennymoor, which is a brand new teacher centre, where we call it the Education Development Centre, and we use it for courses, for conferences, for groups, for meetings, whatever it is that we need. Now, we've got one in Spennymoor, which we've located on an industrial estate, loads of parking. We did used to have a centre, you see, in the middle of Durham here, at Neville's Cross, near the battle site, but parking was horrendous.
Yeah.
So we sold the building, built a brand new one centrally, it's available from everywhere. We've got another centre, which is up at Stanley, and it's available as well, but it's an old school building, and it's not as popular as this one. And we've got another centre which is attached to a primary school up in Derwentside, and there, that's our Global Dimension classroom as well. So we've got different types of centres.
Do you use the centre in any way to train teachers in the use of technology or new resources?
We've got, attached to that leadership centre is our ITSS centre, and there we've got 4 or 5 training rooms all based around technology, interactive whiteboards and computers. Yeah. And sometimes we start the training upstairs, which is in our area, and we have the afternoon downstairs where we actually then put it into practice.
Oh, that's yes. Really good. Yeah.
It works okay. Yeah. So there's that idea of how do we keep teachers abreast of the latest ideas.
Yeah.
And that applies not only to the learning bit, but also the administration bit. You know, how to use the latest technology for exams analysis, how do you interpret those so you're doing something meaningful next time.
Do you ever include universities in the... I don't mean in the training, but I mean, do you use their expertise to bring teachers up to date on the latest developments in academia, in history and geography?
We do when we're aware of it. We do. So we've had, at one recent Durham geography meeting, we had David Leek down from Newcastle University, and he led the whole day on that. And that was done by one of our specialist schools, who's a humanities specialist college, and they worked that programme. It tends not to be the universities, Nicola, you're right.
Because you've got Durham University.
We've got Durham on our
doorstep.
And we are working with them in other ways. Because, for instance, one of the things that I've got is respect for the child. I've got responsibility for that, which is adults' respect for the child, and the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Children. And we've got to promote that more widely across the county. And we're running a piece of work at the moment with UNICEF on making schools respect the rights of children. And we're working with Durham University on that. So for certain things we do, in terms of academic subjects, history, I'm a member of the Historical Association, which is fed by the university as well, but it's not...
Perhaps I've given you an idea.
I wouldn't know where to start, tell the truth. I wouldn't know where to start. Because what teachers need is not the history per se. It's the education, isn't it? But then I've got good links with the education department.
Yes, although a really good history teacher would always be interested in what are the new ideas.
Yes.
But to take her for instance, I've heard a lot of teachers say that women were given the vote as a reward, if you like, for their work in World War I.
Okay.
The latest historical research suggests they were given the vote because of their sacrifices as mothers and widows, i.e. only give it them over 30, because they were the ones who'd given up sons and husbands. So most teachers, some will be aware of that, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
In terms of getting it right for the ablest children in the classroom.
Sure, absolutely.
So that's
food
just the next
thought.
Food
for thought. Yeah.
I wondered if there was a distinctly northeast approach to history teaching or anything peculiar to this area. It's difficult to ask because obviously your experience in other parts of the country. But you said it's very good teaching around here. So what's the distinctive characteristics of history teaching in County Durham?
The local feel to it, you mean?
Yes, but if you've got a really good set of history teachers, what's good about their approach to things?
I think, certainly within the classroom, and I think it's good at secondary level, I don't think it's good at primary level. I think at primary level still, we still tell the story of history.
Mm.
And we've got a long way to go. And I'm not so sure that the latest changes in the Key Stage 1 and 2 curriculum, where we're...
It's going more thematic, isn't it?
Yes, I'm not so sure that that's going to help us in that particular way. The stories might become more central to it. I just don't know. But at secondary level, we've got some very, very good history teachers, because they're not trying to teach the story of the history of mankind on this planet. They're trying to teach those young people how to live, to think, to respond as historians. I think that's what's good.
What's so valuable about thinking and responding as a historian?
Because you're making evidence, aren't you? You're making statements, you're making a judgment, you're making a proposition which is based upon some sort of evidence. Whether that evidence, and we're learning it from the evidence of the past, but it's exactly the same thing that young people need to make today about the wars which are going on, about the way that mankind is going to go. They need to balance the fact, you know, so historians will go to great pains to actually say, this question is asking for a balanced approach. Look at it from that point of view, look at it this point of view. That's a thought process which children will benefit from for the rest of their lives.
But one could argue that without a sufficient awareness of like the varied stories,
yes,
then you're not going to be able to take a balanced view.
But it is a balance, isn't it, between the stories and yeah, the skills.
Yes.
The
factual information has to come in somewhere.
Yes, absolutely, that's right. And that factual information has to be at different levels as well.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at it, I don't know whether, in fact, the national curriculum changed what we taught in history. We taught the same things, didn't we? Maybe we taught the Aztecs, where we probably wouldn't have done that. But we taught the Romans. We taught the Second World War. In secondary stage, we taught the Black Death. We taught the... You know, the same things came out all the time. Nowadays, with the new opportunities, I'm seeing some interesting developments. I brought Ian Dawson up. Do you know Ian?
Yes, I do, yeah.
And I brought Ian Dawson up to challenge some of the thinking. And he's been 2, 3, 4 times now to County Durham to challenge the thinking of the teachers. And I've got some themes now going and some development of themes.
This is really
quite interesting.
Because you were saying you brought him up to challenge the thinking of the teachers. So what was the thinking of the teachers before Ian arrived?
That you have to dip into periodic case studies of history on a chronological base, for which I think there's no evidence that helps children understand chronology at all.
Yeah.
Okay. Just because we did it in that order in year 7 and year 8 doesn't mean that they understand that the Romans came then and the Normans came then.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't think we actually went to the bother of telling them what we were doing. But now what we're challenging them with is, yeah, there are certain periods of history which you will always want to do because you're a historian, you love that period. You want to do the Spanish Armada and you always want to do the
It's exciting.
Because you will bring it alive. There's others which are key points in our historical development as a nation which you can't ignore, even though at the moment they don't thrill the pants of you. But that has to be there as well. But it's allowing them to go one step beyond that and say, can we teach children through one idea of this idea of change and continuity as well?
So the idea of bringing chronology in by tracking themes through time, through the topics you study.
And do chronology through those trackings. So you're going backwards and forwards, you know.
Was this before that? Was this
exactly,
before that?
That's right. And that's the way I think. Because looking back on it, I'm not sure where my chronology came from. And I think it was probably after I started to think for myself and study different bits and try to place them in order. I didn't get it from school. I'm sure I didn't get my chronology from school.
You mean as an adult making sense of things?
Yes.
That's a bit of a council of despair, isn't it? Given that you have to try at school to get them to think in chronological terms.
Yeah, but I don't think we were doing it. I think we were teaching them basic elements of chronology. We're teaching them the literature, language rather, of chronology.
You mean the saying 16th century, 17th century?
That's right. A decade, a century, a millennium, this sort of thing. And that was done very quickly, and after that we tended to ignore it. You can actually see that, because when you actually look at kids' pieces of work, written work today, very rarely do they mention periodic names, times. Yeah. It's all about the event or the person. It's not about the sequence of events and times, you know, and I think that's where chronology helps us to understand. Mm. I've seen too many cases in classrooms where the children are given lots of cards and they've got to put them in some sort of chronological order. The children within 2 minutes work out, well, you just look at the date on the card and you put them in that order. That's not chronology. That's just using the mathematics right in order to get the right answer. But you're learning nothing from the process.
Yeah.
I think we've got to be cleverer about it.
This is the new idea that Ian's got about, about following themes.
Yes. Yeah, and I mean, it doesn't matter what it could be. So it could be, it could be about ordinary people, or it could be about power. Mm. Ian does a really good one about whether, in fact, the monarchy was successful or not. Was it a powerful reign, or was it a poor reign in terms of power? Did the king gain power, or did he lose power? And he has a lovely exercise where he makes people walk up and down the floor. And certainly the Edwards are great, and certainly the Edwards are less great. But when you see the children doing that, you actually see them making sense of the line of history, I think.
Some people would suggest that sort of analysis of the development of the power of monarchy was the sort of thing you could only do at the end of a university degree, because so much knowledge and understanding is involved.
I think if you were to take 12, 15 monarchs, you're right. But if you were to take 4 monarchs at different times, and this one isn't. Look what's happened here. Power in this time has gone to other people. It's gone to Parliament. It's gone to the Church. You know, and we're talking about that. Mm. Because I still want children. Children still live today. And they're looking at that power swing today. And I think history is the one way to help them, because I'm sure citizenship is not doing it.
You mean separate citizenship lessons?
Yeah.
I mean, the general consensus is that, I mean, even I spoke to David Blunkett, and even he agreed that on the ground it hasn't worked out as he wanted it to.
No.
But history teachers haven't really taken the baton of doing citizenship as a discrete subject. They've stuck with doing their own thing, doing history, and then...
Well, no, because we've fought a long way with history and with geography, saying, look, it's here, and it's there for the grabbing. So I've got a couple of departments, what they do is they collapse their curriculum, and on this particular day, it's a citizenship day. And I try to get my historians to say, take ownership of that citizenship day. Doesn't matter what it is that the theme is, you can a geography can turn it into something, a historian can turn it into something, and we're getting some amazing stuff coming out of that, you know. So one geography group, it's geography that came to mind there straight away, and they took immigration, that was the theme, and they had this caravan, and the children went through rooms in a caravan as though they were an immigrant coming to this country. And they came out the other end, and then they went back in the classroom and they talked about the immigrant groups and where they were based in Britain today, and it all came alive. It was emotional. It was, you know... The geographers didn't have to do that, because that's not geography per se, but I think they benefited from doing it. And I think historians do the same, you know. I think there is an opportunity for us.
One issue that I wanted to ask you about was... Yep. The difficulty, if you like, the difference between...
Shall we have a coffee?
Oh, yeah.